going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Alex Hall Hall, and this is the Disorder Podcast, where we try to make sense of our mad, 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 mad world. Sadly, Jason's not joining us today, but I have a killer interview with the president of Freedom House, Mike Abramowitz. Freedom House is an organization that I have followed throughout my diplomatic career because every year it produces a report called The State of Freedom in the World, which reviews the state of democracy, civil and political rights in every country in the world, and it gives each country a rating, free, partly free, or not free, according to a set of objective criteria, such as the state of civil society, the frequency and conduct of elections, the independence of the media and the judiciary, and respect for fundamental rights and freedoms. And I've always come to think of Freedom House's report as a kind of global democracy health check. And sadly, on that basis, I have to say the world is getting sicker. Because according to the latest version of Freedom House's report, released just this month, freedom in the world has declined for the 18th year in a row, affecting one-fifth of the world's population. That means political and civil liberties have got worse in 52 countries in the past 12 months, while only improving in 21 countries. So what lies behind this depressing trend? What does it signify for the future, and what should we do about it? To help talk through these issues with me, I'm delighted that we're being joined today by the president of Freedom House, Mike Abramowitz. Mike is an incredibly respected figure in Washington circles, having worked for 24 years at the Washington Post as national editor and then White House correspondent, and also for many years as a senior executive at the Holocaust Museum in downtown Washington, D.C. He also has the distinction, I believe it is a distinction, of being one of only a handful of American citizens to be singled out by name for sanctions by the Chinese government, imposed on him as a response to his support for the Hong Kong democracy movement in 2019. Mike, it's great to have you on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
We think the world that Freedom House operates in and the issues you analyze are incredibly relevant to the theme of our podcast, which is this sense that the world is heading in a troubling direction where authoritarianism and populism is on the rise. Our international institutions aren't working as well as they should. That misinformation is sowing distrust, and that even in our own societies, there is this sense of increasing polarization, division, and distrust towards our institutions. Tell us, for our audience, a little bit about the background to Freedom House.
Sure. Freedom House was founded in 1941. It was essentially founded as an organization dedicated to the defeat of fascism, It was brought together by a group of very prominent figures across the political aisle who were very concerned about the America First movement, about the rising isolationism and xenophobia in America, and really felt that America had to get involved in the European war, which at the time, if you recall, was very unpopular in America. I think 90% of Americans, according to early Gallup polls, felt the United States should not intervene in the European war, even as the Nazis were overrunning most of Europe, with the exception of the UK, obviously. And so Freedom House came together, and what we're best known for is freedom in the world. But I did also want to say that today, Freedom House also is very active on the ground in many different countries around the world, providing support for human rights defenders, activists, journalists, and others working in authoritarian settings. And really, much of our budget is devoted to that kind of work. We're really an action organization in terms of our advocacy, in terms of our policy work, and in terms of really direct support for human rights groups.
It's so horrifying. It's such a reflection on the state of our world that the protection for human rights defenders has become even more critical than ever. We've all still got in our mind the horrible death of Alexei Navalny. And of course, we all know many, many other individuals who are fighting for freedom and suffering acutely for it. So this is a very, very difficult context.
It's a very good point you're making. And you know, for every Alexei Navalny, there are hundreds of other political prisoners, activists who are really fighting on the front lines for freedom. I mean, in Russia, I think there are hundreds of other political prisoners, many of them not well known. We've been also advocating for the release of Vladimir Kara-Murza.
Of course.
Who is serving a 25-year sentence on completely spurious charges.
His wife was on this podcast.
Oh, she's terrific. And I think this is a really important dynamic in the world, that as you see constricting civic space, rising crackdowns on civil society in countries, not just Russia, but Myanmar, Sudan, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, what you see is many political activists who are having to flee their own countries and set themselves up in exile. And that creates its own set of problems and challenges for the human rights community and for democracies, to be frank, that we could talk about.
One of the frustrations I've certainly experienced is that there has been a narrative in some quarters in Western democracies that we are so compromised ourselves, that our own democracies are not perfect, that we were wrong to try and, inverted commas, impose democracy or impose our values on countries in other parts of the world. A lot of this was a backlash to Iraq and the perceived failures of Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, they were actual failures. I'm going to acknowledge they were failures. But was it the execution or the concept? But there has been this backlash in certain quarters that we need to concentrate at home. We need to get our own house in order, and that we ourselves are too tarnished. Now, what do you hear from the human rights defenders who you are supporting? Do they look at us and say, no, it's too dangerous for us to be associated with you, and you yourselves are compromised? Or do they still want us to engage? How do they view our role?
I think they very much want us to engage. I think the trend you're talking about is real, and the United States and other Western-oriented democracies have a certain credibility problem because of what are very real mistakes over the last, 20 or 30 years. But this feeling of democracies being tarnished beacons, if you will, I think has a complicated provenance, because I think you have to also remember that there is a real thing going on. But there's also, this is a thing that is being whipped up by the autocrats themselves. I mean, China and Russia are under a very active campaign to really persuade the world Western-style democracies are challenged and should not be taken seriously. So it's not just that there are problems, but it's a problem that's being whipped up by the bad guys, so to speak. So you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt. The truth is that if the United States and other powers are not involved in the fight for democracy, then the cause of global democracy will suffer. That is a very clear I very much believe that it's in the interest of countries like the United States, Great Britain, and others to be forceful champions of democracy.
Let's turn to the report. I already highlighted in my introduction that sadly, as your overview of the report, which is currently online, reflects, and I encourage all listeners to go and look at freedomhouse.org because it's a wonderful report, that this is the 18th consecutive year where freedom in the world has declined. So explain in a bit more detail what some of these trends are, and then let's get to the whys and what should we do about it.
So the core trend is that global freedom declined for an 18th consecutive year, which really means that every year for the last 18 years, there have been more countries who have experienced declines in political rights and civil liberties than those that had improvements. Now, last year was kind of interesting because for the first time in 17 years at the time, there had been a narrowing of the gap. And so we had thought that maybe it might be a turning point. But that was not to be the case. This year, we had 52 countries that declined and only 21 that improved. That is really a pretty wide gap. And so it's really was a very bad year for democracy. I think we have to recognize that while we're in this period of decline, we are still way ahead of where we were either at the end of World War II or even 1973, which was a trough for global democracy. And we had, after 1973, the first 30 years of the report, a tremendous growth in democracy. So now I think 88 countries are considered democracies compared to 44 50 years ago. So
44? God, yeah. That's so few.
Yeah. So even though there's been a recession, we're still ahead of where we were. And I think that is something that gives you hope, but you also don't want to take things for granted. I think there's a great line from Ronald Reagan, which I'm going to butcher, but he said often that freedom had to be fought for every generation, and it's only a generation from being extinguished. And I think that you really feel that when you are in an organization like Freedom House. And while some people will say to you, well, things are not so bad, well, yes, but if the current trends continue, they could get a lot worse. So we cannot take this for granted. I think that the three trends that we highlighted in 2023. Number one was there were widespread problems with elections, violence, manipulation. Then you had countries like Cambodia, Guatemala, Poland, Turkey, Zimbabwe, where incumbents tried to control the electoral competition, hinder their political opponents, or really prevent them even from taking power. That was something that happened in Guatemala after Mr. Arevalo, who is the new president there, was fairly elected in an election there. And I think the other two would be armed conflict, often driven by authoritarian aggression, caused death and destruction and imperiled freedom. I still think that one of the major challenges to freedom is right there in Ukraine, where the invasion of Ukraine has helped degrade basic rights in both occupied Ukraine and the Ukraine that remains free, and also prompted more intense repression in Russia itself. And I think, you know, another area that we're concerned about is Myanmar, where civilians bore the brunt of a civil conflict that stemmed from the 2021 military coup. I think the other trend that I think I would just highlight is the rejection of pluralism, which is, you know, we define as a peaceful coexistence of people with different political ideas, religions, or ethnic identities. And that is something that is also we're quite concerned about.
So this is the year of elections. There are elections taking place around the world, including in the US and the UK. I now have American citizenship, so I'm even more engaged in American political developments than I was before. So which are the elections that we should be looking out for this year? And do you see this problem of election rigging or manipulation or demonization of political opponents, is that also happening here as well as in other countries?
A couple points to make about elections. First of all, I think we should pause and reflect upon the fact that the most repressive authoritarian countries in the world feel they have to have an election, right? You think about countries like Iran and Russia, just to name two of them. There is nothing that is free and fair about elections in Iran or Russia. They are a joke, a sham, a farce, whatever you want to call it. But Putin has to go through the exercise of having what he calls an election, because election has acquired a great power that people don't accept the kind of legitimacy of a government unless it accepts, you know, unless they have an election. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that's a hopeful sign in the long term for the power of democracy, because at the fundamental, democracy is about other things than just having an election, but having an election is absolutely critical to a successful democracy. I think the second point that I would make is that there are just some global trends with elections that are concerning. I mean, just two or three just to point out. One would be the rise of social media, and the changes in media have really made the ease of spreading disinformation and propaganda much easier. And so the presence of that in many different countries and then elections around the world is a challenge for elections and for the credibility of democracies. I think number two, you see incumbents really trying to tilt the playing field on behalf of their candidacies to the extent of rewriting the constitution, as it happened in El Salvador, so that they had a clear rule against one term for each president, and they basically rigged the election so Bukele could have another term. And I think you're seeing that around the world. And I think the other thing that's kind of interesting is that even when someone wins a free and fair election, entrenched powers go out of the way to try to prevent that person from taking power. So I think there are a lot of very concerning trends about elections that we highlight in our report this year.
Yeah. So what I wanted to come back to you on this election point is, I mean, I think people in our line of work always used to echo that talking point you made about, but it's actually quite revealing, and you could say quite encouraging, that even despots like Vladimir Putin need to sort of pretend they've been elected. So that shows the sort of enduring underlying appeal of feeling you need some democratic legitimacy. But I'm beginning to feel that that line is wearing a bit thin, because what it actually means is, in more and more countries around the world, we're actually getting the veneer of democracy. For countries that absolutely aren't democratic at all. And that issue is spreading for precisely the reasons that you've mentioned. There is the sort of manipulation of the context in which the elections take place. There is the power of incumbency. There is rewriting of the constitution so people can stay on for more terms. There is preventing certain candidates from running. I think your report highlights developments in a country that both you and I know very well, which is Thailand, where, you know, there was a new young party that won a majority of seats, and then the sort of powers that be, the military and the people around the palace, sort of manipulated it and forged a different coalition, so that effectively this new party was ended up being sidelined. And we've seen that happen in other countries as well. So now I'm beginning to worry that democracy everywhere is now being tarnished. And even in the UK, we've seen, you know, a very thorough established democracy. We've seen attempts by the incumbent ruling party. They now require voter ID, but they don't accept young people's IDs. They accept bus passes and old age pensioner documents, but they haven't accepted student IDs, for example. So that has tilted it in favor of older voters who tend to vote Conservative. And I'm not making this up. There was a Conservative MP who openly admitted their attempt to rig who could vote had failed. So what I worry is that it risks discrediting democracy generally, because time and again, voters go to the polls and then the powers that be manipulate the results.
It's a very valid concern. I'm not trying to be Pollyannish about this or to whitewash or airbrush, if you will, the problem. We have a very real problem. The fact that in our own country, more than 40% of Americans believe without evidence that the election was stolen is crazy and very concerning, and something that suggests a lack of confidence in institutions and that is deeply worrisome. I mean, let me give you one number from Freedom of the World that I think is hugely interesting. when the Democratic, or the so-called Democratic recession started in 2005, there were 21 countries that received the worst possible score, zero, on the indicators for free and fair elections in our report. This past year, 35 countries received that worst score on elections. So that is deeply concerning. And I think this all should be a wake-up call. I think the risk is that elections will be, well, I think two things risk. One is that in practice, elections are going to be manipulated so that they do not reflect the will of the people, and that also they are going to be not taken as seriously if people don't feel confidence in their results. So I think you have a dual problem.
Why do you think this trend is happening? I mean, you've explained different ways in which it's reflecting itself: elections, armed conflict, rejection of pluralism. But can I get a bit more to the sort of why? Why do you think this trend is developing?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's hard for me to identify one particular causality. If I could just mention a couple of factors that I think about. I mean, first of all, I think that there is a economic dimension to this. I mean, I think it's sort of not a coincidence that the global economic meltdown in the 2008-2009 time period sort of had a long tail and really damaged the confidence and the ability of democracies to kind of really deliver results for their people and kind of create an opening to be exploited by both, not just authoritarians, but by these populist parties that have kind of cropped up around the world in various guises. Now, I would just say we have to be cautious that the problem is not populist policies per se, but that the fact that oftentimes populists, when they get in power, like in Hungary, to give one example, they often try to manipulate the system to hold on to power. So, but I think you have to start with economic factors as one factor. I think also the differing approaches of Russia and China, I think both countries have become, if you look at Freedom House scores, much more internally repressive. They have also expanded their efforts to kind of undermine democracy overseas. Certainly Russia, in its internet manipulation, its effort to interfere with elections overseas, would be one example. China's kind of doing the same thing. And China's also being much more aggressive under President Xi to try to undermine the kind of institutions of the democratic world order, whether it's the Human Rights Council or the United Nations or other institutions. So I think the role of China and Russia in trying to undermine democratic principles and democratic norms cannot be overstated. And I particularly think China poses a particular longer-term threat. I mean, China is really trying to position itself as a place that where you don't have to have traditional democracy, but you can still have economic growth. I think that remains to be seen in the long term whether that model will work, but I think it's a very powerful model in some parts of the world. I think the third thing I would just single out, I really believe the rapid collapse of independent journalism, independent fact-based journalism, the rise of the ability of bad actors to really undermine faith in institutions through social media campaigns, that has a huge impact on this problem, makes it very challenging, makes it easier for bad guys to hold on to power. I think that's a factor that I would also cite.
I have a theory. I mean, one of the best books that I read in the last year was by Robert Kagan, The Jungle Grows Back, which made the case that you have to fight for democracy. Going back to your Reagan quote, you can never take things for granted. You constantly have to fight for it. And one reason the jungle is growing back is because America is kind of the main figurehead leading world democracy itself has lost its authority and credibility to promote democracy in the world. I mean, part of it is self-imposed doubt and hesitancy, a little bit of a backlash after Afghanistan and Iran. But certainly what I see is Putin felt he could get away with invading Ukraine because he had perceived that the US might not have the resolve and staying power to really lean in and support Ukraine. And they had seen what happened with the withdrawal from Afghanistan and our failure to enforce the red line in Syria. And that these bad actors, they've always existed, but they're beginning to see a vacuum. They're beginning to see that the US seems to be less willing and able to lean in. And they're also getting away with it. I mean, what's been the cost to Thailand of their military coup? And I mean, they've kind of got away with it. And so more and more bad actors are thinking, well, we can get away with this. So there's been a sort of a little bit of a vacuum. Is that a fair critique?
Yeah, look, I feel there's something to what you're saying, what Bob Kagan is saying. I mean, by the way, some of these problems are not entirely new. There have been coups going on in Thailand for 50 years periodically. So I think what's interesting really about Freedom of the World this year is that it shows that military coups are back, especially in Africa, as a tool of anti-democratic behavior.
Yeah, and they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it.
Yeah, I think there's something to what you're saying. I think this is why Freedom House has always taken the position that it's very important for the United States to be a strong advocate for democracy internationally and a strong exemplar of democracy at home. And that, you know, during the Cold War, it was a propaganda point for Russia and others that we had this Jim Crow situation in the South, where there was not democracy in many Southern states. It was just for a few. And so the Civil Rights Movement, the 1965 Voting Rights Act, the recovery, if you will, of true democracy in the South was a very important factor for the United States going forward. So I agree with the basic premise of what you're saying. It's vital for the United States to be a strong practitioner and promoter of democracy, but to do so with humility and to recognize that, you know, we make mistakes and that we need to recognize the mistakes, own them, and not just be arrogant about it.
After the break, we're going to be talking about the so what. What do we do about this depressing trend in democracy and freedom in the world? How do we push back? What can we do to order the disorder?
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So when I was ambassador, I always used to say to my staff, don't just analyze the problem or describe it. I want you to give me the so what. What should we do about it? What do you think we should do?
Right. Well, look, I think it's a fair question. And, you know, one thing I would say is Freedom House has a strong and growing advocacy and policy team that is very active in trying to recommend solutions to government. So we're very much of the spirit that you were when you were an ambassador. I would say one thing that it's important to just say, there's no silver bullet to this. you have to stop looking at this as like something that there are going to be quick fixes and that we're going to be done with this in 1 or 2 years. I think this is a longer term problem. I mean, it's taken us 18 years longer to kind of dig ourselves into this problem. It's going to take a long time to dig out of the problem. I would just start by saying, I think support for Ukraine, support for democracy in Ukraine is vital. I think it's in the United States and Western and Europe's self-interest and the world's self-interest that we support Ukraine financially. They're fighting for their lives, if you will. They're fighting for the democracy. And the first thing I would say is that providing support for those people in Ukraine fighting for their freedom is number one. I think number two, just more broadly, providing steady support and flexible funding to those on the front lines of the struggle against tyranny is also important. Around the world, whether it's Myanmar, Hong Kong, Russia, Belarus, Ethiopia, Sudan, many different countries, you are seeing huge demand for democracy and for freedom and for human rights, for human dignity. That is being brutally put down. And I think it's important for the world's democracies, both in words and in deed, make it clear that they are going to support these people who are really on the front lines. That is, I think, the second thing I would say. And then I think a third thing I would say, just going to the point of our report this year, protecting free and fair elections. And it's really important to have independent and transparent electoral processes to foster genuine competition and public trust. I think that's a really important thing. I would also say the final point I would make, the media ecosystem, the information environment is a huge problem. I don't have a silver bullet there for you. I think it's very concerning that there's been the disappearance in many parts of our own country of local media. This is happening around the world. I think the lack of free and fair press in many parts of the world, the lack of independent journalism, that is not just a human rights and democracy issue. There's a business model problem there where the business model that kind of existed for many years that made it possible to have, you know, widespread presence of reporters in countries like Russia or China that is leaving. So I think that is something that I would say as a general policy matter, we who care about democracy have to put more focus on.
A couple of times you've singled out Ukraine as being a sort of pivotal arena for upholding freedom. The other place, of course, where a huge conflict has erupted recently that seems to have wider global repercussions is, of course, Israel and Gaza. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts about the implications of what's going on in Israel and Gaza. How do you see that conflict rippling out beyond the immediate suffering of the people involved in the arena, but the sort of wider ripple effects of that? And any sort of final observations there?
I think this is a huge issue for the world. It's a horrific, horrific situation in Gaza, Israel, West Bank today. One's heart has to grieve for all of the innocent lives that are being killed, whether Israeli or Palestinians. It's just a terrible situation on a human level. And I think the first thing you have to just, anyone with a shred of humanity has to really recognize that. I mean, this problem is one of the most intractable problems in the world, but I just think you have to just recognize the humanity of this. I think the second point that I would make is that I do think this conflict has a very significant global consequence in the human rights realm. Without trying to litigate the different grievances, let me just say simply this. Much of the world is looking at this and seeing double standards, right? Talk to my friends and colleagues in South Africa, in other parts of the global South. They see a double standard that is being applied to this conflict, whereas the United States and other democracies are concerned about, say, the human rights of the people in Ukraine, but not Gaza. I think the situation is sometimes more complicated than people say, but I do think that it's a very real phenomenon that's going on around the world. And it's going to, frankly, make it much more difficult for those of us who really care about human rights democracy to really make the case. And so there's a lot of work that's going to be happening. I think it's going to have a big impact.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's it for today's depressing overview of disorder in the world, but hopefully also a few glimmers of light that if people really didn't care about democracy, they wouldn't even bother going through elections at all. And as Mike said, we're still in a better place than we were in the 1940s or even the 1970s. Democracy and freedom are worth fighting for. We should never take them for granted, but we should also never give up hope. So I hope you've enjoyed this show. And if you want to have more material, please read our Substack. The link is in our show notes. Please also tap follow wherever you get your podcasts if you want to be notified when every new episode launches. Finally, we've had so much fantastic listener feedback. We've been getting more and more emails from some of you expressing appreciation or interest or posing questions to us that we try to pick up. Just a final little note, if you really like what you're hearing, please, if you have the time, drop a review about us on the site wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much to George McDonough, our producer, and to Neil Fearn, our executive producer. And I look forward to being back with you another week with Jason Pack.